Moncrief on News Talk.
Now, southern Italy's infamous Mafia. Well, Claire, you're making that face now. And all I'm saying is that many people haven't heard of this mafia. So not being able to pronounce its name isn't that unusual. Has stretched his grasp all over the world. At the centre of drug busts and manhunts throughout Europe and around the world, this mafia group from the deepest south of Italy seems to be absolutely everywhere. It dominates the drug trade, all the while maintaining a constant presence in countries such as Germany, Switzerland, Australia, Canada and the United States. Joining me on News Talk to tell us about this powerful mafia family is Rachel Donadio, contributing writer for The Atlantic. Rachel, how are you today?
I'm fine. Thanks so much for having me on. I'm going to help you with the pronunciation.
Please do.
It's a tough one. It's 'Ndrangheta.
'Ndrangheta.
So it's, I think one of the reasons why this very powerful mafia is not so well known is because it's extremely difficult to pronounce the name. It's a name that derives from an ancient Greek word for man of honor. Quite hard to pronounce, but you can nickname it the Calabrian Mafia.
Which I now will. It's a... very clever ploy on their part to, you know, to stay under the radar by having a hard name to pronounce. So how come we don't know more about them? And they are very big, aren't they?
I think that we don't know so much about the Calabrian 'Ndrangheta because probably they haven't been immortalized in pop culture the way that the Godfather films did for Sicily's Cosa Nostra, or more recently the book and film Gomorra about the Neapolitan mafia, the Camorra. But the fact is that the 'Ndrangheta, the Calabrian mafia, is powerful because it's under the radar and because it looks for ties with Italian and foreign institutions, lawyers, accountants. It skims EU structural funds, it's in infrastructure projects, it's pretty much all over the place, and it's quite difficult to prosecute, especially outside of Italy, because Italian prosecutors have an ability to seize assets while investigations are ongoing. And in other countries like Commonwealth countries, often you can't seize anyone's assets until there's a definitive conviction, which makes it, you know, challenging for authorities to go after this group. But for The Atlantic magazine, an American publication, I profiled Nicola Gratteri, who is the top Italian prosecutor who has dedicated the last 30 years of his life to prosecuting and pursuing the 'Ndrangheta, and a large trial that he helped orchestrate with more than 450 defendants opened in Rome last week and will be ongoing.
Right, so he is having some success, but tell me more about this man, because I know that he could just as easily have been part of the Calabrian, the mafia, couldn't he? But he went a different road.
Well, he came from, as he puts it, a good family, a family with good values. And he knew from early on that something was rotten in the area of Calabria in which he grew up. He told me that one day when he was walking to elementary school, he saw a dead body by the side of the road. And he got a sense that something was fishy in this part of the world. And he really is cut from the same cloth as the criminals that he spent his life prosecuting. So while he is under police escort and has been since 1989, you know, he's kind of comes from the same world as the people that he has gone after. And so he told me that it was just a question of his values and his family values. And he's dedicated his life to fighting this group. It's a game of cat and mouse because, you know, they, as soon as the law catches up, they've often found other means of avoiding it.
Right. And he really has dedicated his life to this. He went to college, and then after college, he took a very difficult state exam to become a magistrate. He was very determined that this was the world he was going to go into, and they were going to be his targets.
Yeah, I think he has no doubt about that. And again, Nicola Gratteri, chief Italian prosecutor in Catanzaro, the Calabrian city of Catanzaro, who helped put together with the cooperation of law enforcement in many countries, arrests of more than 400 people. So 450 people in this group have now begun to go on trial, first in Rome, then the trial will move to Calabria once they build a bunker courtroom big enough to hold all of the defendants and their lawyers with COVID social distancing. But one of the things that's important about this new trial is that it will attempt to lay bare the network of connections between the organized crime group and institutions, lawyers, accountants. There's a former member of parliament from Silvio Berlusconi's party who was among the arrested. All of these men who've been arrested plead not guilty. And And the important thing is that it'll try to just piece together how this group is structured. One of the reasons why it's been so difficult for prosecutors around the world to go after the 'Ndrangheta, the Calabrian mafia, is because the group is based on blood ties. And so no one wants to betray their family. They don't want to go against their family. And so, and it also operates with a set of rituals and rites and a hierarchy, but also kind of a franchise system. So you'll have different little groups of the 'Ndrangheta all over the place, and they're not always in communication with each other. They're more like franchises, but at the same time, they're often, you know, they're blood family members. And it's very rare to find someone who's gone against the family. This new trial uses an unprecedented number of pentiti, they're called in Italy, which means someone who's gone, you know, who's become state's witness. And about 20, Gratteri told me, that the prosecution relied on the testimony of about 20 people who went against their families to cooperate with the state. This involves a massive witness protection program. And often, Gratteri, the prosecutor, told me, often the people who do decide to turn against their families are younger men or women. They do it, he said, out of love or fear. And if they're men, they just don't want to spend their entire lives in prison. They might have gotten into prison around, you know, age 20. And if they're women, they want a better life for their kids. So, right. But again, very few people have turned against this organized crime group the inside.
Yeah, it sounds like the tide is turning a little bit. And at the center of that change is this man. You said he's under protective, he's not quite custody, but he's been highly protected. And so too is his family. I mean, what kind of conditions do they live in?
Well, I mean, I don't know all the details because he didn't really want to get into it, but he lives in a walled arm, you know, compound guarded by the authorities in Calabria, and he coordinates his every move with police. But he makes public appearances, although not so much now. Ever since these arrests happened in December, he's kept a much, much lower profile. So everywhere he goes is with a police escort, and, you know, he changes his movements around. I, for the piece that I wrote for The Atlantic, I was able to drive with him from Calabria to Rome in a car, an armored car. The door was extremely heavy to close. I got in the car and I said, "Is this an armored car?" And he kind of smiled and said, "Yeah, yeah." But he loves to drive. I don't think he can, you know, do that so much anymore because this trial has put even more pressure on him. But right. He said that was really the only thing that gives him a sense of freedom, living for 30 years under police escort.
And some of the realities of that police escort, he hasn't been to the cinema in 30 years. And basically all he can do is he's big into growing vegetables and gardening.
Well, you know, wouldn't you? I mean, look, I think that before the entire world was on lockdown and, you know, shut up at home, he was used to this. But again, there are many prosecutors in Italy who've gone after this group. He is the best known of them and probably the most dogged, just because he's been chasing these criminals for so many years, coming from the same part of the world, Calabria. But from Calabria, a region with high unemployment and terrible infrastructure, this group is extremely rich and powerful. It controls a huge amount of the cocaine trade to Europe. It brokers cocaine deals between Latin American cartels and Europe. It is involved in ports all over the place. And after Calabria, the city with the highest number of 'Ndrangheta operations happens to be Toronto.
Wow. I was reading as well that during COVID-19, they were giving out cash to people who were out of work, weren't they?
Well, look, it's hard to know who's doing what exactly, but yes, of course. As you know, COVID hit Italy in Europe first and hardest, and it was quite devastating for many businesses, the economy, obviously a tremendous loss of life. So if you're a business that's struggling and someone knocks on the door and says, you know, here's an envelope of cash, you know, we'll come and you don't owe us anything now. I mean, it's all kind of sotto voce but yes, there's that. And also the 'Ndrangheta has been profiting off of Calabria's public healthcare system for many years now. It's not a very good healthcare system, in part because of this mafia involvement.
God, what an organization. Rachel, thank you very much for joining us today. The 'Ndrangheta. Did I get it towards the end?
Yes, you got it. Thanks for talking to me and my pieces out in the Atlantic. Thanks for having me on.
Rachel, thank you very much indeed.
Moncrief on News Talk.